And welcome back to Coast, G. Edward Griffin, our special guest. And we're going to come back and take your calls as we continue talking about his work, including Creature from Jekyll Island. Okay, welcome back to Coast, your phone calls as well as we talk with G. Edward Griffin. Edward, are we at this point the laughing stock across the world with what's happening here?
Yeah, I think that's pretty obvious. I would say yes. I've done a little traveling around the country, and I talk to people on the phone a lot in other countries. And I don't know that laughing stock is quite the right word, but they laugh at our politicians. You know, I think that people, especially in Europe, they have been aware of the difference between political leadership and the people of a country. In other words, they're more apt to say, well, I have no problem with the French people, but I think these French politicians are idiots. And they tend to take that same attitude toward America. They love Americans. Well, not all Americans, of course, are not all Americans are lovable. But they're smart enough to see that there's a difference between the will and the temperament and the desires and goals of the American people and the will, temperament, desires, and goals of the leadership. So what I'm getting from people around the world is that they think that our leaders are idiots at best and very evil people at worst. But they don't laugh at America. They have more of a pity for America than that. You know, they don't think that America is making a blunder, but America is being overly influenced by their leaders, I guess.
I just think that this incredible quest to bring us down to our knees, to bring us down to levels that they are at because they can't reach our level of perfection and democracy and things like that. It's just, it's the strangest thing I've ever gone through, Edward, in my life. I mean, I remember John F. Kennedy when I was a president. When he was the president, I was 13 years old when he got killed. I barely remember Dwight Eisenhower. I was really young. But, I mean, after that, I mean, everything just seemed to go downhill. I remember my father was a World War II veteran, and nothing this government could do then would have distracted him or made him believe that they weren't acting in the best interest of this country. I can't say that anymore.
No, I think we've all gone through that experience, George. I certainly have. I'm a little older than you, and I can remember back, you know, I remember the tail end of the World War II, and I was still a boy, but a couple more years later, I would have been eligible for military service. But I was raised in that era when, you know, we revered our founding fathers. We thought a lot about the Constitution. We didn't quite understand it, but we read it, and we knew it was good stuff, and we thought that our government was there to protect us, and we fought wars to save the world for democracy and extend freedom and so forth, and a lot of men and women lost their lives. They gave their lives to defend those high ideals. That was the world we were brought up in. But now, it's almost impossible to hold that kind of reverence for the system. And as I said a moment ago, it's not that the people have changed, I don't think, although they're being influenced and going through the government school system, which sort of dumbs them down. They don't learn anything about the founding fathers anymore, except that they were probably bad people and they owned slaves. That's about the only thing you'll learn anymore. And they're being kind of conditioned to turn against the heritage of the country. But everything you look at, if you look at corruption in Washington, D.C., and in all the state capitals and in City Hall, and it's just hard anymore to hold the kind of reverence that we once had. So, and I don't think that's accidental. I think it's all part of this hammering down and balkanizing every country, actually, to divide it, to bring about chaos, so that nobody has a support mechanism anymore, not even the family. The family has been shattered. So that the object is to treat everybody and hammer them down so that they're all alone. little individuals, and they cannot survive that way. So how do they survive? They have to turn to government. Say, protect us, feed us, shelter us, give us jobs, give us education.
Save us.
Save us, yeah. And that's their goal. And this is what we see happening right before our eyes.
Phone calls now with G. Edward Griffin. We'll do that for the rest of the hour. And let's start by going to Port Huron, Michigan. Harry is with us on the wild card line. Hey, Harry, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tom, and good morning, Ed. My concern is this, Ed. I share your value of money being, it's coming lower and lower. The value of the dollar is dropping. The problem with that I have is while people don't want to be want a cashless society, a lot of people are tired of, at least for who I talk to, and I myself, having to go to a bank or a credit union all the time and take money out just to do things with cash. And that's the rub, I guess, that concerns me. Is there a better way to do things that we don't have to have to do with things with cash all the time? Because it can be a real inconvenience, and if you're disabled, it is even a more inconvenience for us.
Well, I see that as kind of almost a non-issue. Now, maybe with disabled people, that's a special case. But there's nothing on the books that requires you to use, cash. In fact, I think most people are using less and less of it all the time just as a matter of convenience. But it's a question of having the freedom to do so if you want to. There are certain transactions that maybe you just don't want anybody to know about. It could be private. Doesn't mean it's evil. It doesn't mean it's illegal. It's just private. You might want to help somebody that it might be embarrassing to help. Maybe there's somebody in prison. I'm just making this up now. I get letters from prison all the time. People are in there because of so-called tax evasion or something like that. And they come out and they need help. I have helped a couple of those people. We'll just say that somebody wouldn't want it to be known that they helped a former felon, for example, because that could be used against them. Say, see what an evil person this is. He sent money to this former felon. And the point I'm trying to make is, as long as you have the freedom to use cash or not to use cash, that's all that I feel is important. Is when they take away the freedom to do so and you must use checkbook money, that's what I'm opposed to. I think we should have freedom of choice.
Are we ever going to be able to solve the banking dilemma, Ed? Because I really think that's a big problem for people, lots of people. They control everything.
Well, that's the whole point of the Federal Reserve. That's why they control everything, is because the banking cartel, called the Federal Reserve, has been given the legalization to exist and to plunder the American people legally. As long as the Federal Reserve has that status, there's nothing we can do, which is why I am the voice that's saying, let's not waste our time auditing the Fed. We know what the Fed is doing. They brag about it. They're plundering the American people. They're creating money out of nothing. They're destroying the purchasing power of the dollar. We don't need to audit the Fed to do that. We don't need to audit the mafia to know what the mafia is doing. And I think that we should just need to get on with the job and get rid of the Federal Reserve cartel and restore the nation to honest commercial banking without any special privileges that makes it any different than any other business. In other words, the Federal Reserve must honor its contracts like any other business. Federal Reserve won't get bailed out at taxpayers' expense when they make bad business decisions and that sort of thing. So the short answer to your question, in my view, George, is that as long as the Federal Reserve exists, there is no solution to that problem.
Janet Yellen is still there. Now, does the president have the right to replace her?
Yes, technically the president can replace her, but will he? Does he have the real power to do so? I think there's a misunderstanding about the strength of the Federal Reserve versus the government. Earlier in the program, I made a kind of an outrageous statement. I said that we think that the government controls the Federal Reserve, but in fact, it's the Federal Reserve that controls the government. And I think this is a classic example of the truth of that statement. When the president appoints a chairman of the Federal Reserve System, I doubt very much if throughout history, at least recent history, the last 100 years, I doubt, well, of course, the Fed hasn't been around for much more than that, but I doubt very much that the president even knows the person that he's appointing to be chairman of the Federal Reserve. It's certainly not in his personal address book. He takes a choice. He makes a selection from maybe two or three names that are presented to him by his big donors, by the heads of the political party that he's associated with. In other words, the power brokers behind the scenes tell the president who to appoint. And in every case, the list includes only those people who are either bankers or very close to the banking fraternity, somebody who might be an academic who teaches banking, but still would like to be a banker if they could, in favor of the whole banking system that we now exist, that now we now have. And so the choice is not the president's choice. So if they got rid of the present chairwoman, she would be replaced by somebody else who was suggested, very strongly suggested to the president. And if he didn't do that, he'd be in big trouble because the suggestion is coming from his financial backers and his controllers.
Good point. Bill is in Toronto, Canada, international line. Hey, Bill, good to have you with us.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I have read The Creature from Jekyll Island. I was introduced to it a number of years ago, so I've been following your writings a long time, Mr. Griffin. My question to you is something I just found out about, probably by accident on YouTube, but just during the last couple of weeks. And it's called the Exchange Stabilization Fund. Apparently it's controlled by the Treasury Secretary, and this money can be used for all kinds of nefarious purposes. And the literature and research that I read on YouTube suggests that this Exchange Stabilization Fund kind of controls the Federal Reserve, which is different from what your books and your teachings tell us. Can you comment on this Exchange Stabilization Fund?
Well, yes, it's quite complex, and we don't have to go deep down into all of the complexities of it. The bottom line is that it's like a slush fund, and it's not discussed normally in the news. It's certainly not taught in the textbooks in school, but it's a slush fund that gives the Treasury Department and the President a huge amount of latitude to spend money. That doesn't show up in the budget. It doesn't show up in any of the ledgers. It's just there, and it's a huge amount. And it can certainly be used for great political advantage domestically or internationally, which it has been. But the bottom line of it is that the money itself that's in that fund has to be created out of nothing, literally, by the Federal Reserve. So you could make a case that the Stabilization Fund controls the Federal Reserve. I don't look at it that way. I think that the two are merely two different sides of basically the same coin. It's the banking fraternity creating money and using it sort of in hidden agenda programs. And I don't see that really one controls the other. I see them as two aspects of the same entity.
Have you heard?
It's very nefarious. It needs to be eliminated.
Ed, have you heard that the Federal Reserve is going to come out with what they call the Fed coin, which is going to be its own Bitcoin? What a disaster this could be.
No, I haven't heard that.
Yeah, Google Fed coin, FEDCOIN, and it refers to cryptocurrency established by a central bank. National banks would forge their own Bitcoin with the comparative ease, and Bitcoin consultants have sketched possible scenarios on how it will work. That's just all.
Well, I haven't heard that, but I can see immediately where that would go. I know that the large banks have been spending quite a bit of energy and money researching the Bitcoin phenomenon since it became popular a couple of years ago. They know that the blockchain technology is the technology of the future. There's no way to stop that, I don't think. We have to distinguish between blockchain technology and Bitcoin, which is a means of using the blockchain technology to make financial transactions or transactions of any value, even like barter could be used, or settlement of mortgages and things. It could be all kinds of different settlements of value, but the focus is on currency right now. So I know that the banks have been interested in figuring out how to get into that market and how to co-opt it, because they cannot allow it to remain independent out there without what they call control and protection. You know, they want to centralize it so they can control it, just like they control fiat money. Right now, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are beyond the reach of the Federal Reserve and the banks. But what they're working on, and I'm guessing now that the Fed, the BitFed or whatever they call it,
FedCoin,
is probably their solution. They're going to try and use the blockchain technology to move their fiat currency
around. That's right. That's right. And they want to control
it.
And they want to try to put Bitcoin out of business, I guess.
Yes. And if they do that, of course, it'll look to the outside like it's very similar to Bitcoin. But the differences will have to be, in order for them to be interested in it, it'll have to be that they can expand the quantity of the currency at will. And it'll have to be that all transactions are recorded and made available for inspection. There'll be no privacy.
A couple months ago, I was in St. Louis, and I just wanted to get some cash out of the bank. Not a lot. Not a lot, believe me. And they couldn't do it. They said, you have to call ahead. We'll get it done for you, but give us a day. I'm only talking about like $1,500, not a lot of money. And they couldn't do it. They said, this is Friday, you're here late, and, you know, we just don't have it. I couldn't believe it, Ed.
It is hard to believe, but I suspect, I'm a suspicious type, I guess. I suspect that's probably bank policy to try and begin to discourage people from doing that kind of thing.
Taking cash out. Boy, they don't complain when you put it in, but they...
No, they don't. Well, they want it all, and they want you to leave it in there. That's the bottom line.
They don't
line.
Want you to, it's right. They don't want you spending it.
Yeah.
Because what is that? What's the percent for every dollar that's in there? They can lend, what, 10? Something like that?
Well, yeah. It depends on the bank and the size of the transaction and all of that. And there are different different levels of banks. But that's a good average. Legally, it's at 10. But they have ways of extending that. They have ways of using things other than money as the basis for the multiplier.
What a great business to be in.
Oh, it's a fabulous business. You can create money out of nothing. It's not that they spend it for themselves, but they loan it, and so they collect interest on...
They make the money on and they make the money on money they don't even have to own.
That's right. It's a handy business. I wish I had thought of it.
Oh, my gosh. What a deal indeed. Hey, give us a few of your websites. We're going to take a break and then come back and take final calls.
Okay, thanks for that. Well, the place where we sell books and recordings that sort of go into all of the things we're talking about is our Reality Zone site. It's called realityzone.com.
All right.
And then, if anybody's interested in getting our free weekly, actually 3 or 4 times a week, a news report, it's called Need to Know News. Actually, there's a dot in
That's
there.
That's simple
to
know, remember.
Yeah, needtoknow.news. And I think you really enjoy that. And then I mentioned freedomforceinternational.org before. That's our think tank. So if you want to get involved and make a change in the world, that's where you would go.
All right, we're going to come back in a moment with G. Edward Griffin and take final phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you along with G. Edward Griffin. Edward, I've gotten a few emails from some people who are upset that... you're punching George Soros. They say he's a hero. So I want your reaction to that.
Well, he's their hero. I guess their values are either different from mine, or we have a different view of what he's doing, I guess. I know that Mr. Soros has been on television, and he's talking about, you know, fixing the world and bringing about social justice and all of this. But I see where his money goes, and it goes into organizations, all of which I have seen no exceptions, that are trying to break down civil order and bring about government intervention and the expansion of government at every level, causing violence, threatening lives, breaking, damaging personal property, injuring people. So I guess we either have a different idea of what his goals are or what he's doing. I'd like to talk to that person and see what they like about him.
Well, and I know that in Ferguson, Missouri, a few years ago, during the episode where a young Michael Brown was shot in a police scuffle as he was trying to get the gun away, that there were protests there. And it was widely known and reported in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch that George Soros funded the protests.
Yes. Well, these weren't, if you look at these protests and the people who are behind it, you know, they're always saying things like Black Lives Matter, and they try and present their cause as though it were they were defending opposing racial injustice and that sort of thing. But when you look at who these people are, they have other agendas, and they're just using that as an excuse. And the poor people that believe them get caught up in it, and they think, oh, these are heroes. And they don't really realize their history, what they've been involved with, who finances them. And other than Soros, he's just one of many. And so I just feel sorry for people that don't understand the background of these agitators, because their goal is not social justice. It's not equality. It's not an end to racism. Their goal is chaos, and then martial law,
mm-hmm.
and absolute totalitarian government with them in charge. That's what it's all about.
They want to be in charge, don't they?
Yep. They want to be in charge, and they have to destroy the existing system in order to do that.
Let's go to the phones again. Let us go to Tom in Riverside, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Tom.
Hi, George. I wanted to say we probably got a good chance right now with a guy in there that didn't have the backing that you were talking about, that it's not he's independent, and how do you feel about that? And he's about as good as you're going to get, I think, in practicality. And it seems like he's got a very intelligent mind as far as business goes, and we've got a good shot here. I think we need to quit worrying about, you know, I hate to say this, George, but I don't see North Korea as that big of a problem as long as we treat them fairly. If you want to slap them in the face and square off, you're going to get in
what,
a fight.
I would say, Tom,
you know?
You're absolutely right with people who have reason, except that Kim Jong-un is insane. And
he is, but a lot of people are. The whole world's full of people.
Yeah, I know, but he's controlling their buttons, and that's the danger. If he were out of it, I'd say negotiate with North Korea. Let's become friends with them and make this planet work.
Try. Yeah. And Trump is a good. I mean, I think he's a good level-headed guy. I think he can do that. And the rest of it. I don't believe in this Guantanamo. They ought to just empty that thing out, let those guys go back. We'll kill them on the battlefield if that's what they want, and forget that place. That's evil. Torture is evil. We need to get on with rebuilding Detroit.
All right. Let's get Ed's thoughts on that. Tom, thank you. Ed, I think in Donald Trump's case, take away his smartphone so he can't tweet. And and the wall, I think, is a foolish idea. I think there's new technology which is cheaper and would do a better job besides putting together a 2,000-mile ugly wall. We don't need to do that. But
go ahead. I hear you, and it causes me to go back to a little deeper level, which is most of the conversation about Trump, whether we like him or don't, or whether we approve of some of his actions and not of others, they have to do with issues. This issue versus that issue, and there are thousands of issues, you know, but seldom do we hear anybody talking about principles. What does Mr. Trump, or what does Mrs. Clinton, or any other candidate, what do they believe? What are their principles, their political ideology? That is more interesting to me than issues, because once we know what their ideology is, then we can anticipate how they will decide on any issue. But nobody wants to talk about principles. You know, what is their concept of the proper role of the state? And since the state is nothing but the legalized use of force, We give the state the authority to have agents that carry guns and can arrest people, put them in prison, and execute them if necessary. So we've legalized all that. If we have to assume, okay, what's the proper function of that use of force? We have to talk about that. We have to know what it is that we want the state to do and what we don't want the state to do. And nobody talks about that. So when we apply that to Mr. Trump, we don't know much about Mr. Trump's principles. We know that he's taken a stand on some issues that we like, or some people like, some people don't like, and we're trying to evaluate a man on the basis of individual actions. We don't know yet what he really believes, because that's the long-term answer to how he will act in the future. For example, I'll just give you an example. We like a lot of the things, I say we, I'm talking about myself and a lot of people who have a similar worldview that I do. We like a lot of things, such as we feel that immigration ought to be legal. That if you're going to have immigration laws, you ought to follow the laws.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a question of whether immigration is good or bad. It's a question of whether you follow the laws. So you make a law, and then it is.
And if you don't like the law, change it.
Change it, yeah. So the issue is not immigration. The issue is illegal immigration. But nobody wants to talk about that.
Nobody hears that. They don't listen to that.
Nobody hears that, yeah. No. And so we're dealing with issues. Do you like immigration or not? How about the principle that the law should be upheld or changed? That's a principle. And so I think that Mr. Trump has done a lot of things issue-wise that we approve, but we're not sure what the principles are. For example, almost everything that he has done in the way of foreign policy, which has not received a lot of focus, has been a continuation of the same thing done under the Obama administration.
Right.
Obama and Trump's foreign policy, there's no difference.
What kind of grade?
Continue?
What kind of grade would you give President Obama for his 8 years?
A grade on the basis of promoting Mr. Obama, I would say he gets an A. On a grade in terms of protecting the lives, liberty, and property of the American people, which is the only function of the state, in my view, he gets a failing grade.
Really? I would have given him about a B, I think.
About a B?
Yeah.
Are we talking about Obama?
Yeah, about the president.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't see any protection of property there. And liberty, he was all for taking away all of our liberties in the name of national defense, you know, and security, and God knows what else. But anyway, that's my grade would have been more severe.
What would you have given George Bush?
About the same.
Yeah.
This is the thing that I don't see much difference between Republicans and Democrats when it comes to these issues of foreign policy, let's say. That goes on the same. The rhetoric might change a little bit. Speeches change a little bit to depend on what they know that the people want to hear. But once they're elected, they go along and do the same thing as the previous administration did.
Well, let me tell you, Ed, what's so strange. If you don't like what President Trump is doing right now, you are labeled as being on the far left. If you do like what he's doing, you're labeled as being from the far right. It's amazing.
Well, labeled. Yeah, it's kind of hard to avoid being labeled, because those who have no argument, have no basis for their opinion, only go on labels.
Right.
Oh, what are you? Oh, what are you? Republican or Democrat?
Yeah.
Are you left? Are you right? Are you a Trump fan, or do you like Hillary?
I go down the middle of the road. I call it the way I see it. I think some things I like, some things I don't.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, when people start using labels, you know they've run out of reason.
Eric is truck driving in Indiana. Hello, Eric. Thank you for calling us. Go ahead. There he is.
This is Eric the Mock Joke Guy. How's everybody?
I want to hear that horn in that truck.
Here you go.
All right, there it is. Okay, go ahead, Eric.
Anyway, has you or your guest ever heard of monetary expert named Byron Dale?
Byron Dale, I have not. Ed, have you?
No, I haven't.
Tell us a little bit about him, Eric. Who is he?
Well, back in the early 1980s, he was a rancher from South Dakota, just doing regular everyday business, and he was doing very good business. And one day he got to running the numbers and decided, you know, just, you know, living hand to mouth, you know, borrowing every year and all that. He decided just to pay off his loan, you know, to the bank for his ranch. And then the banker got hostile. And he ended up in jail. He was beaten up real bad by some members of the South Dakota Highway Patrol in his own kitchen. And
for paying off his loan?
For paying off his loan, yeah. I mean, they don't want people to pay off those loans.
How dare he? How dare he pay off a loan early?
Exactly. And Mr. Dale, now, he's got quite a few YouTube videos. He does seminars and everything.
Oh, he's an author now. Is that the same guy? He's written books and he makes speeches on money management and wealth?
Monetary expert, yeah. It's like,
all right, that's him.
Yeah, exactly. What money is, what money does, and how it gets loaned into circulation, and how we went from a wealth money system to a debt money system.
All right, it sounds like someone like you, Ed.
Yeah, except I've never been thrown in jail for paying off my mortgage.
No, they didn't beat you up for that.
No. So I don't know. I think there's got to be more to the story than that. I do know that the banks, well, any financial lending institution would prefer that you not pay off your debt.
As long as you're paying interest on it, sure.
But I didn't know that they were beating people up when they did that. So I suspect there might be some other element to the story, but I really don't know.
Let's go to Mark, first-time caller in Prudenville, Michigan. Good morning, Mark. Hi there.
Good morning, George. Hello, Edward.
Hi there.
Hello.
I had a question and a comment on the protest movements. Going back 20 or 30 years ago, I used to see reports on G20 conferences, WTO conferences, and there was a lot of violent protesting going on back then. I guess, is there any relationship, or were those protesters being backed and funded back then, and are there any relationship between the old protest and, like, Occupy Wall Street and coming up to the protest of today?
Well, I can answer that question a lot easier than the first part because I don't recognize that group by name. But I do know that first of all, I think we have to realize that virtually no large significant protests are spontaneous. They just don't happen. And all of them are supported by organizations and funding, substantial funding, which is not visible on the street. So the question is that who is behind all of these protests? Now, there might be a lot of dissatisfaction, a lot of angry people, but they don't get all organized and they don't all show up at the same place. And they don't all get on the same bus, you know, and that sort of thing. And they don't all have the same little cardboard signs that they hold up with the same slogans. When you see that sort of thing, you know that there's an organization or a coalition of organizations.
When they're printed up, you know something's going on.
Yeah. So, and now the next part is there a continuity? And there absolutely is. It doesn't take much time on the internet checking the names of these organizers and spokespeople for these modern day organizations or protests, so called. And you can see they have a history, and some of them go back quite far, and they've been doing this all of their lives. And they've all of them, let's say 90% of them, have been closely affiliated with what we used to call communist organizations. I mean, their leaders went to Moscow and trained, and they got money from the KGB and things like that. And this can all be documented. So it's no mystery as to that the fact that this is not a spontaneous American revolution. This is organized, and I'm not suggesting that in today's world that this all comes from Moscow, because I believe it doesn't. I believe much of it comes right here from the good old U.S. of A. But the thinking of the people is the same as the old Moscowites, the old Bolsheviks. They're Bolsheviks. They're Marxist-Leninists, and they'll tell you so. You look at the signs. You see them out there in the protest. You see the hammer and sickle. You see the CPUSA
symbols
out there. Yeah, they don't even hide it anymore.
Ed, give me your thoughts on
there is a continuity.
Give me your thoughts on Putin. What do you think? CNN is calling him the most powerful man on the planet right now. They're coming out with a special one.
I don't think he's the most powerful man on the planet. I think he's very powerful. He's every time Putin speaks, the world listens, you know. I think Putin is probably no different than Obama. I think that both of them are collectivists. I think both of them want this world domination. They're on the other side. I mean, they oppose each other, not on principle, because they both want the same thing, but they oppose each other because of dominance. They want one wants to be supreme over the other one. And you find that's true of a lot of conflicts internationally. One nation fights another nation, not over ideology. Take Russia and Germany, for example, Nazi Germany. They believed exactly the same thing. The Nazis and the communists in World War II were fighting for the same thing. It was national socialism, where the Nazis and the commies wanted international socialism. And yet they slaughtered each other, not because they disagreed, but because they fought over dominance. They wanted to know who was going to control.
Who was in control? Who was in charge?
Yeah,
that's what
all it's. That's all it's about. Yeah. So we don't have to say this is coming from Russia. It's coming from the United States now.
Do you feel as if, we only have about 30 seconds left, that we are in one of the most tensest periods, the most tense period in a long time?
I believe we are in the most critical period that we've been since the American Revolutionary War. It's
I think the same thing. Ed, thank you so much for being on the program. All his websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, Eldon Taylor joins us. We're going to talk about the power of the mind. Get ready for that. Plus, of course, in the last hour, we'll take your phone calls as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM.